After the Oscars, we're all still
we're still
feeling it emotionally. Yes. We've recovered from
one of the lowest rated Oscars in history.
Each year they get lower and lower. Nah, the film industry's not dying.
I still have glitter in my ass.
Good for you. That's Mike Schmidt, ladies and gentlemen, talking about the glitter in his ass here on Comedy Film Nerd's Oscar wrap up. So yep. We did the big live video stream, which was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
I enjoyed doing it.
This is episode 409.
409.
For a big Oscar wrap-up. But yeah, we want to thank everybody for tuning into the live stream. I know it was a little hard to sync up because it wasn't quite live, real time. Mm-hmm. But you guys did it, and some great comments, and you guys supported the store, and we appreciate
it. Cool. And we're a third of the way to 1227.
Nice.
409. Of that big 1227 nice party.
We've called you the human abacus on the comedy circuit for a long time.
Yes.
Now we know why. Folks, you see it in full effect. He's in full effect, like 80s hip-hop.
I always had a weird basic math.
I can do the same thing. Yeah. That weird thing where you're just like,
look at it and go, yeah, okay, it's that.
Human calculators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but on the most rudimentary level you could ever imagine. Okay. You know, I mean, you get two digits, you get into three digits, maybe, but then you start getting into four digits. It's like, I'm not fucking Russell Crowe, please.
Yeah.
Toss me out a window. Fuck it.
Quarter of the way to 1636.
Oh, nice. Hold on.
So, all right, overall,
a decent show.
A decent show.
Yes.
I think it was, you know, obviously...
the same criticism as all the shows. Too long.
But that criticism, I've said this before. Let that the fuck go. Yeah. Don't act every year. Don't act surprised when a show that's consistently 3.5-4 hours is suddenly three and a half or four hours. Every year it's like this.
Yeah.
Don't complain it's too long.
There's no attempt to make it shorter.
Don't.
None.
They'll certainly give lip service to it that they're going to. It's like I'm a huge baseball guy. Mm-hmm. And now everybody's, we got to make the game shorter. We got to do this thing where you only one visit to the mound per inning or you get a pitch clock. Dude, it's baseball. If you like baseball, watch a lot of it. If you don't watch it. Right. But don't come and tell me that my sport is too long. Go watch something else that's short.
Yeah.
And same with the Oscars, man. You don't want a long-ass, congratulatory, self-backslapping show. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it. Yeah. It's the same as it is every year.
Yeah.
That's never going to change.
Big speeches, self-congratulatory. Yeah. Well, look at how great we are.
Short shrift to some assistant costume person who wants to thank their mom. Yeah. Violin bow hits them in the mouth.
Yeah.
Literally, the fourth person who walks up to go, and I want to smash.
Yeah.
It's a viola crashed over her neck.
And a bunch of social issues tangentially referenced.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly. Somebody no one's ever heard of. So my mom, when she had can't... Bah, 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 bah. Yeah. Meanwhile,
poor
Frances
girl.
McDormand just gets the fucking wax on
and
never acknowledge that it was all white women nominated in her category.
Frances McDormand puts her Oscar on the floor.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other women got to stand there and blaze through it like John Machida and a fucking trombone slide hits them in the head to get them off the fucking stage. Please give these people their moment.
Well, let's start with the monologue. What did you think of the monologue?
I've never been a huge Jimmy Kimmel fan. I say that because I thought he did a fine job. Considering it's like 2 years ago we talked about Chris Rock, right? Whose monologue, when he was really bringing up, that was the big acknowledgement of the Oscar so white thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny at first. And then as the show kind of wore on, it was too much.
Right.
He was just, everything was black, white, everything was, you know. And I thought Jimmy Kimmel, I mean, handled this in the best way you could. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I haven't ever watched him and gone, wow, he's awesome. But he's had these moments where he's fought a good fight for certain things, like when he took the side for Conan O'Brien. You know, I mean, that was, I'll give him credit for that. And what he's doing with healthcare with his child.
Yes.
But that being said, I don't watch late night TV because I think it's a dead fucking medium. I think I watch, every time I watch any late night show, it's like, oh, I'm in a TV museum.
So, some would say that about the Oscars.
Right.
It's a dead medium. You know what I mean? It's just, it's, and I find myself floating in that a little bit. You know what I mean? Where I watched because I'm doing the show. I'm not joking.
Right.
I haven't watched the last 2 years. I used to go to parties all the time. We used to have ballots and, you know, Oscar pool. And it was really fun. Mm-hmm. But as I fell off, you know, being friends with a lot of people or whatever, or getting invited to those parties, I found myself not really caring as much.
Watching the Oscars is going to become a niche market.
It really is. And I got to say, I don't know this year. Like in years past, I've watched the SAG Awards and the Golden Globes and everything to, you know, keep abreast because of the show that we do. This year, I didn't. I had fun watching it. Doing the live stream was cool. Yeah. And a lot of people watching the live stream saying, this is the only reason I'm watching the Oscars.
Right.
And I got to tell you, if we weren't doing this show, I don't know. I love going to the movies, but I wouldn't be rushed. I wouldn't see a movie every week.
Yeah.
I like going to the movie theaters. Like, that's something I've always enjoyed doing, and I will.
Right.
Is this the final episode of Comedy?
Yeah, I was going to say. It sounds like it's leading up to something. Yeah.
Big announcement, guys. I'm out.
But I hear what you're saying. You know, because you've been doing this show for 9 years now. It's been a while. It's been a minute, as they say, as young people will say. Yeah. 8 years. And
divide
you
409
change.
By 12 or by 52.
But you change as guys. You know what I mean? You and I are talking. Your daughter's 13. Holy God, that's ridiculous to me. Mm-hmm. I've changed as a person. We all change. And so you think you did this because you loved it and you love seeing movies and you're filmmakers and it really interested you. But then as you get older and maybe it doesn't so much anymore and other things take precedence and it can lead you to kind of drift away a little bit. And so you may force yourself to be involved. And then I know that's not the case because you love it so much, but the Oscars are the tangential part. I mean, movies are movies, and you're always going to love movies.
We're always going to love movies.
But the Oscars is that weird circus part of it where you're like, I don't need to see this.
Exactly.
Really.
I don't need the Oscars to enjoy watching movies.
That's a great point. And I feel the same way, too. Like, I watch the Oscars and, you know, some people make some good speeches. And it's like, we've talked about this in the past. Like, hey, you've got all these people watching. Here's an opportunity
you've got a soapbox.
Bring a soapbox. And like, you know, certain documentary filmmakers, they're talking about what this subject or that subject, and it brings awareness, and I'm glad for that. Mm. But, you know, it's hard. And we've talked about this in the past. I'm watching this show and we talked about it live Sunday. So good for Frances McDormand. Okay, let's hire more women. But it's hard to watch a bunch of millionaire, rich white ladies with a shit ton of privilege wearing $30,000 in clothing and jewelry who have, I guarantee you, they're not cleaning their own houses, and the women of color cleaning their houses, do they give them...
But this gets to who you've become as a person, who you've become as a guy. Because honestly, let's not just limit it to rich white ladies. That room is full of Scrooge McDuck motherfuckers, which is fine. And that's the way it is. But that's what I'm saying. Maybe we don't need to see Scrooge McDuck motherfuckers give each other hand jobs once a year and for 4 hours. And because that's what it turned me off 3 years ago, where I just kind of went, this is a...
I'm not going to let that criticism go that it's too long.
it's become, and again, it's the changes in me. I'm not saying they or whatever. It's tone deaf. It's a tone deaf because it's, you know, even some of the movies when you watch Three Billboards or whatever, I'm sure when they were making Three Billboards, they didn't think it was going to be problematic or tone deaf when it came out. But then when it did, because of changes in the world, you kind of looked at it with a jaundiced eye and went, ooh, hold on, the racist cop's the hero guy? Like, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So the world is moving so quickly now that I think it's affecting these things.
And also it takes so long to get a movie made. Like, you know, when you're making the movie, the social climate and atmosphere could be completely different than when it comes out.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And so the same with the ceremony, you know, because we've been hearing about the Me Too and the What's Up or not What's Up, Time's Up.
Yeah. What's up?
Hashtag what's up. The Bud guys are coming back in a big way. But those are all unbelievably important things, clearly in the real world, as well as in the Hollywood world. But then they give you a 5.5 minute black and white somber cello music bullshit thing where they bring out Annabelle Sciorra for her first public appearance, and she's with Ashley Judd and Salma Hayek, and we're like, oh, well, we might know you guys are together for this. And then they throw it to the taped clip, and you just go, that's it? That's all you did? I mean, I don't expect them to change the world in that instance, but it almost seems like even doing that small amount, which they might think is a big amount, is short shrift to a problem that's eating the world.
Yeah, and it's also, too, I mean, like you say, we've changed. Like, I, in the last year, have become way more of a socialist.
Wait, what? Hold on a second. You?
And so I'm just like...
None of us have noticed that, Graham.
No.
This hasn't permeated every corner of my life.
You palm-striked your local congressman and put a Lenin stamp on his head? Wow. I didn't know that when I saw that was happening. I thought it was a bit, but I mean, good for you.
But no, so I'm sitting there, and it's I'm looking at everything like, you know... There's a lot of people, you know, 60% of Americans don't have $1,000 in savings. Yes. And as you say, I'm watching a bunch of millionaires of all ethnicities. Everyone in that room is a privileged fucking millionaire.
But they also can't win, because if they go and they try to draw attention to the plight of the poor and the masses, then the anonymous trolls and roaches and everybody else on Twitter will go, oh, yeah, you hide behind your big walls with your armed guards, you Hollywood phonies and you liberals. Well, they can't win, well, dude, even if they reach out.
You can't win against the fucking idiot trolls on the internet.
True.
Fuck them. I don't put them into the equation. I will say this, though. They can win in terms of their own hypocrisy. If you're going to sit there and none of them are like, I sold my $10 million home and I live in a nice $1 million condo and I gave $9 million. None of them are doing that.
But why should they have to? Yeah, I saw your eyebrows go up. I saw your eyebrows
they
go up.
They absolutely...
Because, you know, I still have a foot in the old world. I do. They made it. They earned it. And that's what the market will bear.
Then here's the thing. Then just do that. Then just... How are they better? The Republicans, the conservatives... Oh,
this is a movie podcast.
No, it's not. Yeah. You brought the show. Yeah, you brought it up. So, if they're going to sit there and say... I'm fighting for this cause and this cause and this cause. Great. But this one? Nah, that one cuts into my summer home. Nah, fuck you. You know what I mean?
Who said that? I mean, I don't know who said that or who did that. I mean,
I
don't
think
know
you
what
have to
people...
look at it as a sometimes in a broader sense that you know, any good is good. Like if Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie are going to poor areas in Africa and bringing the cameras with them, it's good. You know, there's
yeah, you bring a couple of kids home with you.
Yeah,
that's fine. It's
yeah, but you know, all that stuff is good. Now, is there hypocrisy? Of course there is. But at the same time, like, you know, we're watching the Oscars, and we were talking about this during the live stream. It's like, you know, it's almost like baby steps. We're moving in the right direction with you know,
baby
social
steps
awareness.
Lost, correct? Wasn't it? It was one of the
yeah,
animated,
yeah.
I believe it lost. Unfortunately,
it did. It was a one of the short films. So I think it's good, but yeah, of course there's hypocrisy. Of course, their Oscars are going to constantly get. You know,
the last time we had a Native American presenter on stage was one that wasn't scheduled. Prior to West Study, it was Sasha Littlefeather when she took the award for Marlon mm-hmm. Brando.
Yeah, and what is she doing up there? You're not supposed to be there. You weren't invited. Yeah. What's Brando doing? Get off your island and accept your award, yeah, you fuck. Yeah. What are you supposed to be, fancy?
Get off your island.
And also, why is Brando off the hook? Brando sent a fucking Indian to get his goddamn award. You sent a Native American? Well, then aren't you just a slave owner yourself, Brando? I indict you, sir!
No, yeah. Now you're just being a troll and you're just finding ridiculous arguments because you know what I'm saying is correct. I'm not having fun.
I know you're not. Pretty clear.
So let's get into Best Picture.
By the way, Wes Studi, is that his name?
Studi, yeah.
Studi.
After that performance, we're not getting another Native American for another 75 years.
Yeah, when he called out all of Hollywood for being pussies that aren't in the military.
No, and he couldn't read a teleprompter, and his jacket blinded me with its blueness.
Yeah.
Nice.
What did one of our guests say? Feathers and leathers? Is that
what
they have?
That's what Sheila Shalaki said is... She would like to see more. She's Native American. Would like to see more Native Americans on screen that aren't just in feathers and leathers.
Right.
Like that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, can we just be in a regular movie, not playing the Indian? You know what I mean?
We had Thunderheart.
That's Val
from
Kilmer,
the
right?
90s.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
From 1994. Boy. We're really...
I like that Chris had it locked and loaded, though. He's I hope to God this Native American thing comes up, because I am going to drop a Thunderheart anvil in the middle of the fucking table.
Val Kilmer saved that
The white guy playing the native. Man, great example, Chris.
I like it.
Yeah. And then
a feather in his pocket or something, sure. I'm sure.
My favorite part of that movie was that...
Johnny Depp, Native American.
When he was with the Native American policeman, mm-hmm. and Val Kilmer was the one that had the vision.
The white guy had
the
vision.
Yeah, the white guy had the vision.
Not the actual Native American. The white actor who's not really Native,
who's part Native in the script,
had the vision. Perfect.
So the Oscars is frozen in amber. It just is.
I mean, it's
one of those things that's not going to, you know, anything short of... I mean, it's what you are rooting for, which is anarchy and flipping of podiums in a campfire.
It's not what I said. It's not what I said.
That's what I took from it. So
calling out rich people to give back more because there's a huge wage inequity and I'm a godless hippie that wants to throw the podium.
I'm all for eat the rich. I mean, absolutely. Believe
me. Are you sure? You just said otherwise. You just said she earned her right to sit in her fucking mansion.
Well, let's put it. If you get rich, it's a chance you take. You might get eaten. But I mean, the point is you can still get rich.
You might get eaten and rich.
Yeah.
So you could get...
I can be honest with you. I'd throw 30 years of rich in there if I got eaten at the end of it. I don't give a flying fuck. Go ahead, take me out. It's too late for me, but if at 20 of you just said, hey, man, you're going to have 30 fucking amazing rich years, and then at 50, you would get an apple in your mouth and throw you out a spit,
right,
as long as you kill me before I'm on the spit because I don't want to go Cornell Wild like fucking Naked Prey, I'm done. I'm in. Kill me and eat me if I'm...
What did you think of Jimmy's monologue, Mike Schmidt?
That's the hardest job. You know what I mean?
Because
he's got to... He can't do anything... controversial.
Exactly.
He can't do anything cutting.
It was definitely safe, but it was like, it wasn't crazy safe. Like, it was like, it was like...
It wasn't Jimmy Fallon safe.
No, it wasn't Jimmy Fallon safe. No, no. But
Jimmy Fallon would literally still be doing a soft shoe if he had hosted the Oscars. Right. We'd still, the monologue's still going on, him doing a weird dance and sipping water nervously.
So, but it was okay. It was, you know, it's the Billy Crystal conundrum. It's like, you got to get somebody who won't... who can, you know, nudge and, you know, mm-hmm. rub Hollywood a little bit, but not too hard. You know, you can't make anything too controversial or too biting.
But
that,
so that's why...
Or you'll have Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes, which I
love. I love, but they hated it because he was like, you guys are all a bunch of rich assholes.
Yeah, and I Katie Holmes, I can't even look at you.
Yeah,
I mean, so it was hilarious.
Called out Mel Gibson. He said,
so
people that work in TV are ugly. Fantastic.
I mean, and
funny, but that's not what they want for that show.
That's not what they want.
Again, because nobody puts on their $30,000 ball gown to go and have that happen and get mocked to their face. Nobody does.
No. They want to hear the agent jokes and the producers dating, you know, people dating younger women jokes.
Right.
They want to hear those jokes that they hear
every year. There was almost an Oscar pool of checklist of old jokes that you literally hear at every single Oscar.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely, yeah. Because I liked Chris.
You know, God bless the monologue writer from... Yeah, God bless the monologue writer from 20 years ago. He's still getting residuals because it's, it's a lot of the same...
The guy who invented the Oscar construct monologue.
Yeah,
it's actually a template in your final draft.
Right.
Oscar monologue.
It's over and over again. Yeah. So, it was okay. It was
you have to be okay. You have to be safe.
You
do that little tweak, a little bit of that sparkle in your eye nonsense, whatever. But this is why... You know, I think we've actually had this conversation before. You know, when Hugh Jackman did it, turn it over to a guy like that. Let a guy do a song and dance, man, and do production numbers and everything, and why not?
Didn't quite work with Seth MacFarlane. I mean, they didn't like him for sure.
Because he's not one of them.
Right. And he also...
He might be rich.
And he pushed things.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was probably one of the richest people in that room.
Exactly. But to them, it doesn't matter. He's not a star or, any of that stuff.
And also,
Jimmy Kimmel needs...
He did a song about I Saw Your Boobs, and then that was like, oh my God, did you hear what he did? Yeah. That was like,
Well, Jimmy Kimmel needs all of these people to come on a show, and he needs these people to want to be interviewed by him. So he can't be too mean or biting. He can't call anyone out in there.
It's a circle jerk, all of it.
I mean,
It just kind of is.
Did they announce he's going to do next year yet?
I don't know.
Well, Graham says there's no ceremony next year.
Yeah.
we're putting torches to these people.
That was it, the last one.
we're going to add up all of our diamonds that we would have worn. We're going to give it to people that fucking work for a living.
You know what's interesting? It's
well, hey, when can these people wear their blood diamonds in public? One night a year. Give them a fucking break.
Yeah.
Right?
And they don't even have to buy them.
No,
you know,
exactly.
They're given with the outfits.
I watch it and I go, I don't know why people hate America.
So...
You picture, come on.
Come on. We had
a home,
best. We, now, wait a minute. We had a best foreign film category.
They open their infant bone jewelry box. They pull out some rouge out of their monkey skull called container. They rub it on their face. They throw on their blood diamonds. They come out and they have a good time.
Yeah.
They throw money to the poor. They feed them red vines at the theater next door and pretend like that's a bit. And everyone's happy. The fuck is that,
Which,
dude?
By
come
the way,
on.
The other thing was, it was a, it was just an, another take on the bit that he did last year.
Yes, it was.
It was
but like, I got, I, listen,
it's
if you're
funny,
gonna have,
it was good.
If you're going to have a group of celebrities go and visit the poors and bring them things, how do you miss the opportunity to bring cake?
Right. And let them eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So monologue, meh. Okay, you know, but that's exactly
it's
what
just,
we
yeah,
expected.
But that's all it's ever going to be.
Right.
You know, after Jude Law, you know, almost quit Hollywood and show business because he got made fun of, everybody went,
oh,
we
I
can't
know.
Do that anymore.
Oh,
yeah,
poor dude, Jude Law. Yeah, look how upset he got. I'll tell you, one of my favorite hosts always will be David Letterman.
He'll tell you it's the worst thing he's ever done and he hates it, but he hates himself every time you hear him talk. It's such a drag.
Shave the beard and fucking go to therapy. I'm tired of listening to a millionaire complain.
All right. First of all, the beard is the beard, and I totally get the beard because he's just like, hey, look, I shaved every day for fucking 40 years. I'm never doing it again. I'm never. So I'm on board with the beard. But I just
he's got hillbilly old comic beard.
But I listened
I don't
want to
see any more Civil War recreationists. Just shave your goddamn face. I don't care what you're going through in life.
I like it. I think it's great. You know, he's got Paul Shaver hiding in there occasionally to do a good laugh. But I will say that, you know, hearing an interview, because Letterman is a hero. He's literally the reason I'm talking to you guys, one of them. And but to hear him in an interview when anybody tells him he's good and him deflect and say, no, I'm not. It really gets frustrating because you go, just accept
embrace
one
it.
Ounce of courtesy. Just, right. You know, we're trying to tell you how much you mean to us. I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I'm ignorant.
I'd like to talk to him and then turn it around when he does that. Go, you know what? Fucking put one in your mouth, old man. You fucking ruined comedy. Television's awful. You should kill yourself.
What happened to you?
Let's see if he fights back. See if he fights back.
I think he would, actually. He's
that's what I would like to see. God. I would force him into fucking accepting
God, what
a
would you say to Ernie Kovacs?
Oh, I just have three monkeys come out and hit him with a mallet.
Ernie Kovacs. Nice reference.
Yeah.
Thunderheart, Ernie
Kovacs.
I'm
going to go back as far as the 90s. That's as far as I go.
18?
One of my favorite bits was when Letterman did that bit with the cab drivers and the popcorn. That's got to be on YouTube somewhere.
Oh my God, I don't remember that bit.
Yeah,
sadly,
but it shows you. I mean, even Chris Rock. I remember when he did the Oscars maybe 10 years ago, and he made some joke about Jude Law or something like being in a bunch of some actor is like, wow, this guy's in everything was the joke he was making. He
right.
He had nominated a bunch of things. And
not an offensive joke
not an
by
offense
any
at all.
Stretch of the imagination.
And Sean Penn gets up there and goes, I'd like to say to our host, Jude Law is one of our best.
One of our finest
shut
actors.
The fuck
I'm like,
up.
What is wrong with you? Yes. And this is like, okay, yeah.
Because
this is
it's,
why people
because
hate
it's a
Hollywood.
Geranium of self-importance and nonsense. That's what the Oscars is. It's this... There's no. I bet there's not even any air in the room. You know, they just breathed coins. I mean, it's like, oh, what the fuck? And that coins actually. None of those people have seen fucking coins in years.
Yes, they.
So I mean, it's. I again, it's just an out of touch dinosaur. But that's what it's always going to be.
And
you'll always have a cake on your birthday.
And the other thing about it too
Oscars
is, I really think at some point the Oscars have said, "This is what we are. This is what we're going to be. We're not going to change. We're not going to try to become more relevant." What they tried to do to become more relevant was to add more best pictures, to try to get it to 10, to actually
get to 9
more people to watch. And it's always 9. The other thing that they,
I'm going to stop you real quick because you're probably right. They said those things, but absolutely with 100 times more defiance than you're lending that phrase. We're not going to change.
Yeah.
We're going to do what we want. I guarantee you. They think they're doing nothing wrong, pal.
Right.
They think this is what everybody loves us, and this is what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And they're not, I mean, they have to be looking at every year the ratings are lower than the year prior.
Yes.
People are, the movies.
Well, that's a lot of, too, cord cutting and all that nonsense.
And the
too.
Bean counters, too,
TV,
are probably looking
period.
At it, though. You know, it's live TV, but you're still getting
millions
sales, of people.
But also ticket sales, the big blockbuster movies are doing, the tentpole movies are doing
they're
well,
doing
but overall,
fine.
People are not going to the movies as much as they were.
Overall,
well, the
movie attendance
is ending. I mean,
overall movie attendance is down.
You're
going
to have
sure.
to start with same day release eventually. You know what I mean? Where you can put it in people's houses as well as in the theater at the same time. Because you got, it's, I mean,
I think
Netflix is killing you.
I think that's where we're moving.
Yeah.
I do. Now, one of the things that they also said that for the lower viewership, and I don't believe this, is that because a lot of these Best Picture nominees didn't make a ton of money. Like, there were not any, like, blockbuster movies, like a Dances with Wolves or something that made, you know, a ton of money.
Yeah.
And I think that's an excuse. I don't really believe that. I think it's more the Oscars that people just aren't interested in, not necessarily the films.
Well, they've been, you know, they've been saying that a lot since Dark Knight was nominated, because people tuned in. That, you know, that show did have... I think it had a pretty good audience, but then everybody's like, well, you got, that's why you got to nominate these movies. This is what people like. So that's what will get you viewers. And so now every year they always take them to task and go, well, you didn't nominate any blockbusters. You didn't do any of that, you know, and it's a cop out. I mean, it's just, you know, because right. What do you want? I mean, because go watch the People's Choice Awards if you want to see that, you know what I mean? It's right. Just, that's not what the Oscars is, has been, or ever will be.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's get into analyzing some of these winners. Should we, which direction should we go in?
We're not going to go through all of them. We did
no,
that
we're not.
We did that last
week. We'll do the big ones.
The big ones.
We'll do Best Picture. Let's talk about Best Picture.
That's the big one.
I thought this was
the closer.
We were talking about how this was a pretty strong category. 80%.
You know? Okay. Yeah, Phantom Thread had no business.
Yeah, Phantom Thread had no business being
what?
Here.
I liked Phantom Thread.
Oh,
how
dare you?
You're kidding me.
I liked the movie. All right, let's talk about who we're talking to here. I like quiet movies where people are doing quiet things. I'm on board with that. And so I did enjoy Phantom Thread.
Wow, you're the first person I've talked to who enjoyed
it. I saw it the night it opened in 70mm. At like midnight.
Are you kidding me?
I have the program. They gave away programs.
You saw it in 70mm?
I did. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I love Paul Thomas Anderson.
For the sweeping dress epic scenes.
Well, when he was driving on that curvy road, oh my word. Oh, if I had pearls, I'd clutch them.
Mike Schmidt has listened to previous episodes, and he's coming in here just to be contrarian. That's what this is all about. That's what today's all about.
I love it.
He's like, I'm going to just go against anything these guys say.
What was your favorite part of Phantom Thread?
I will watch Daniel Day-Lewis come in here and tell us we're idiots and walk out. I want him to do anything, everything, all the time.
That would have been a better movie.
Okay.
That would have been a better movie.
I dug it. He was a narcissistic, you know, fuss budget, and I dug Cyril. I dug that.
Narcissistic. That was on the movie poster, by the way. Narcissistic fuss budget.
I'm in.
That's a great way to describe that character, because when you say narcissistic fuss budget, there's not a lot of people that go, yeah, I want to
listen,
see that.
I like loud toast. I like simmering mushrooms.
There's too much
like
movement at breakfast.
Too much movement at breakfast.
This was wheelhouse for me. I'm telling you. I like fashion shows that take place on one floor. I enjoy all of that stuff. In a bedroom or a house. I enjoy a sloppy princess who then gets her dress and has to give it back. And I'll maintain this, and I tweeted it, and I'll say it here to you guys. The teamwork and diligence shown by the team of Woodcock seamstresses to put together the princess's dress at the end of the movie once the disaster had struck.
Spoiler alert for this boring bag of dirt.
Yeah.
Is more teamwork than shown by anybody in the Marvel Comics fucking universe. The efficiency of that plan to come together with fucking Woodcock upstairs vomiting into a shoe, and they put that goddamn dress together.
They pulled it off.
Yeah, they're damn right.
I mean, there was a ticking clock. There was. To get
and then
the
there's
dress
a slide. They take the dress back, and you get a little fierce, and she's like, nah, she can do whatever she wants, but not while she's dressed by the House of Woodcock.
How did you like the creepy first date where he's measuring
love
her?
Love it. Loved every second of it. I loved the breakfast order. I loved her scene, whatever, matter what you do, tread carefully. See, you thought I didn't see it, and you thought I was doing a bit. Fuck you, I love this movie. Now, is it the best movie of the year? Is it an Oscar winner? I don't know. I mean, if I'm voting, you know, certainly you've scored me, former meathead bouncer who likes quiet things, so I'm in. But I dug it.
So,
So it should have won best narcissistic fuss budget film.
Yeah, sorry. If there was a category for narcissistic fuss budget,
the trailer bored me. I watched that. I heard the trailer started, and I was like, Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh, this is going to be awesome. Yeah. I mean, 40 seconds in, I'm like, shut it down.
I can't argue with either of you. I really will not. I know this is my thing, but I love the fact, again, because all the interviews afterwards are Paul Thomas Anderson. Like, I handled my own foleying or whatever the fuck, and I'm just like, great, loud footprints. I'm in. I want it.
This is
crunchy snow.
This is a 50 Shades argument. This is a 50 Shades argument. This is like somebody who's going to go see this movie. They're on board no matter what it is, and it doesn't matter.
Dare I say 50 Shades makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Women who go, look, I want a hot billionaire to S&M me. Great. That's you get that movie. This Phantom Thread is, well, I guarantee you, nobody who made this movie thought of a guy like Mike Schmidt when they were thinking of their audience. No one on the face of the earth.
Which is why they should consider it a victory. They reached me.
Yes. You know, that's, and I'm sure this movie reached about 10 people.
It is the everything that's wrong with the Oscars that we've been talking about. It's just pretentious period piece, all white people with accents and gowns. Dump it.
Although ironically, not the movie that one of the Merchant Ivory guys made. So right. Yeah, Call Me by Your Name.
There's a movie like this every year since the 90s. Mm-hmm. When Chris stopped watching movies,
yes.
That comes out that I go.
I just stopped making references.
Every time, yeah, when Chris stopped making references, about 97, Chris was like, yeah, I'm done making references.
Done. Finished. Yeah, everything pre-97, I'm good.
So which movie are you saying is that there's one like this?
Every year.
Call Me By or Phantom Thread or Call Me By My Name? Because he's about to go
Phantom Thread. Oh, Phantom every Thread. Year there's a Phantom Thread, there's yes. an accents and gown sure. period piece movie right. that I'm just like, and everyone goes, oh, it's so amazing. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. It's boring.
Yep, there's a Shakespeare in Love.
I dug it.
Another there's 90s. A fucking whatever.
Yeah. That although Shakespeare in Love won.
Asparagus metaphors get me. What can I say?
So now Shape of Water.
A lot of vegetables,
Water,
a lot of simmering.
Shape of Water did win this category. I was surprised. I was happy to see it won, but I didn't think it was going to win.
We talked about this with the Doug episode. We thought maybe Dunkirk and Shape of Water were going to split.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or...
I really thought Guillermo del Toro would get for director but lose for best picture, but he didn't. He won both. And so you also have Three Billboards I thought was going to win, and then Dunkirk I thought possibly would win, but both of them got shut out.
Dunkirk, won a bunch of the
previous awards.
It was cinematography, which was a big one, and it won sound mixing.
No, Blade Runner won cinematography.
Oh, that's right. Deakins won. That's right.
All I know is Dunkirk stole...
Won film editing.
What was it? Sound editing? What did it steal from Baby Driver? That Baby Driver, literally the narrative of the film is...
Sound mixing and sound editing.
Sound mixing and sound editing.
That's what Baby Driver is. It's literally a creation of sound mixing and editing, and you give it to the war movie because things went boom. Get the fuck out of here. By the way, I need another war montage in the fucking theater, please. You bring the boys back home and over there. Get the fuck out. Like, you don't care about these people. Don't even pretend.
Well, that I'm on board with.
So are you talking about Dunkirk or...
You're going to get shot like Bogosian at the end of talk radio. Some nut's going to come in here and plug you sometime when you're espousing these views.
It would prove my point. Gun owners are fucking wingbirds. That's right,
nothing.
NRA.
There is nothing he will not bring back. Gorgeous.
So, I'm looking at this, this list, and there were a couple that were good movies, but you knew weren't going to win. Like Get Out, you're like, okay, that's going to maybe win something down the line. It's not going to win Best Picture.
Well, when he won for original screenplay, which was a great...
Right. You know, he was done.
You're like, oh, that was it. That was the one they gave.
And Lady Bird was a good movie, but honestly, Best Picture, no, I don't think it should have been there.
I
still deserve to be there more than Phantom Thread.
I think this was very much to me like 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Get Out gets screenplay. Tarantino gets screenplay for Pulp,
right?
And then they give the Oscar to The Fable rather than to the movie that deals with controversial issues because Pulp Fiction is very very aggressive and in your face. Get Out was an aggressive in your face movie and it deals with a lot of things. But instead they went with Gump or you go with Shape of Water. And I'm not comparing those two movies, but I mean, in the terms of something ethereal, something that's more of a fable than something grounded in reality.
Right.
So they gave him screenplay to go, well, look, you get that.
Right.
Because, we recognize what happened here. But
yeah, and it was deserved. This is what we're going
well,
for.
Well, it's exact. And we talked about this last year in the documentary category. You had 13th and the O.J. Simpson one, I believe, won last year, which is good.
Yeah.
But it's in the past. It's the O.J. thing, and it deals with a lot of race, but that was the race problems of the 90s, where 13th is like, look at what is happening today with the private prison industry. And I agree. The Oscars, if a movie's too much in your face about social issues, about the problems and things that could be fixed that we're all looking at right now, which Get Out does.
People shut it off.
People shut it off. I mean, yeah. Get Out. A lot of white people were sort of confronted with that movie. And I think when you're too confronted, especially if you're the Hollywood elite, you're going to go,
here's the thing about Get Out though. Like, what it did so brilliantly is if you're confronted with something, but you're not entertained, all of a sudden it gets rejected.
Sure. Like, it's a very entertaining movie.
If it's entertaining first and then you're confronted with something, like if that's the right ratio and this movie was, it's so much more effective.
Yeah.
Well, because you just said something where you said if it's in your face about something like that, I didn't even think Get Out was in your face. I thought obviously its message permeates the entire film, but it's not aggressive in what it's bringing to you. You see it unfolding because it's a reality that we all kind of live in. But to have it flipped and shown to you that way might seem in your face to somebody who doesn't understand or doesn't, you know, deal with that sort of thing on a daily basis. You know what I mean? And so I didn't find it to be in your face. I thought it was great. It was layered in the way it unspooled and folded for everything.
I felt that way for me. But I think it's in your face like the Academy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Academy is the rich people at that party in Get Out.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I thought it was a masterpiece. I mean, I love every second of that movie. And you know what's funny? I just thought of this the other day. Lil Rel, is that his cop buddy? Is that's the actor's name, right? I think Lil Rel.
Yes.
Dude, he's Dangerfield in Caddyshack. Like everything he says is fucking bomb throwing funny. Like everything, everything the dude does and says, and it's a small part, but everything he says, he gets the out. I mean, it's just everything he does is gorgeous. The whole movie's gorgeous. I mean, but Jesus,
he gets all the funny lines.
But also chews them up and spits them out and crushes them over the wall. Everything's a home run. I mean, it's so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing too. And Jordan Peele apparently tweeted this Sunday night. He was just like a picture, you know, after he won the Oscar, he's just like, what the fuck? Cause I mean, that guy, Comedy Central, funny sketch show. Really funny sketch show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then this, and then this top grossing movie.
It's quite a journey. The other thing, too,
which is amazing.
Yeah. You know, you look at the journey as far as, like, you know, Blumhouse has basically an MO of, like, all right, we're going to make these movies for very cheap. Universal's going to release them, but they're all going to be cheap. Like, you know, you can have control of your film, but you're not going over $5 million. You know, whatever it is, it's like they make these low-budget horror films, and they're very strict on the budgets, and then Universal releases them. So it's kind of a home run from a filmmaking standpoint, whereas you have a low-budget horror film that's made a ton of money and gets nominated for an Oscar. That, you know, not a lot of horror movies get nominated for Oscars. You get Silence of the Lambs, Exorcist, there aren't that many. So the fact that it even got this far is amazing.
Well, that Blumhouse, because they put out Get Out. And then I started to pay attention to them. I'm like, oh, okay. And I love that model. And I'm like, all right. And then they...
You know, the Purge, Whiplash.
But then they just set fire to like all of their goodwill by putting out that They Come at Night. What was it that came out over the summer that I went and saw an opening
Happy
night?
Death Day?
Like a mistake. No.
But there's a...
It Comes at Night or They Come at Night. And it's an apocalypse story, maybe. I don't know. It's a family who lives in a cabin in the woods, and then and then it's like this quiet simmering. It just went nowhere. And when it ended,
you must have liked it. It was a
quiet movie. No, that goes please. Nowhere?
Cook some mushrooms, idiots. No, it's just this whole movie. Like it was this collect. I was in the back row, and it was this collective. It ended, and the credits come up, and everybody just kind of went. Like that's really this collective shrug in mass from everybody in the room because it was a whiff.
But that's they don't care because each one is like, you know, a five or under.
Oh, sure.
And then it's like we only need one to do well, and it funds the next 2 years of these.
Yeah, you're just skipping dimes off the glass at the carnival, and if one of them stays, you get the bear.
Exactly. So then let's go to director. You know, this again very strong category minus one. But you have Christopher Nolan, Jordan Peele, Greta Gerwig, PTA, and Guillermo del Toro. Now, Shape of Water won, Guillermo del Toro won. But if you look at this category, I really thought Christopher Nolan was a very strong second. I thought that as far as like directing went, the way these films were put together, the imagery, the storytelling, all those put together that go under the heading of director, thought Shape of Water and Dunkirk were in a league of their own.
Yeah,
after these other
and then
movies.
And you know, and then and like I mean, Get Out, all of it too. You got to give credit. I mean, if you could talk about Get Out and Lady Bird, the casting, you know what I mean.
Yes.
All of the set design, all of the things that the director oversees.
Right.
And so much as we talk about so often in the show, it's not just the casting. of actors. It's the casting of your DP. It's the casting of your costume people, right. Your makeup, your everybody.
And how you fill a frame, how you tell a story, how you work with the editor, how you pace everything. Uh-huh. It's, you know, all that falls under the director.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a pretty strong category, except for boring toast clothes.
Yes.
But Mike Schmidt just loves.
Boring toast clothes.
In 10 years, you're going to be sitting in a house and you're going to go, you know what?
I'm going to give this another try.
And you're going to love it. You're going to love every second of it.
You know, if I was. Because
your world will have slowed down by then.
I will say, though, if I were 90, maybe I would have another look at this and go, you know what? Yeah, I can really relate to this character.
Well, 10 years from now, after the American Empire collapses, we will be fighting for our own survival.
We'll be fighting for our Phantom Threads?
Yeah.
I like rich people porn. I mean, I like people in nice clothes, and I like mahogany desks. I mean, that's why I like Michael Clayton. I mean, Michael Clayton's a brilliant movie, and the stories are great, but just to see him and Sidney Pollack in that dark bar, I mean, it's so gorgeous. It looks like everything I had my face pressed against the window staring in at my entire life. Right. You know what I mean? It's just the thing to aspire to. And if it means I get to aspire to a woman poisoning me with mushrooms and then holding up limp asparagus as an example of my failings, I'm willing to go through it.
Fair enough. All right. So let's go to actress in her leading role. Frances McDormand won this for 3 billboards. I really thought Sally Hawkins deserved it a little more, and the reason is because she played a mute character and had to really act and emote with her eyes, her facial expressions, her gestures, and it created more of a challenge for the actress, and I thought she pulled it off beautifully.
Yeah.
But Frances McDormand, not to take anything away from her, was a good performance.
She's a very good actress.
But I thought Sally Hawkins deserved it.
Yeah,
more.
And I think there's some good moments in 3 billboards, obviously, but and Frances McDormand, the angry mom who wants justice for her daughter, and then the time she sort of has that, there's that one scene where she has that memory about the last thing she said to her daughter, and
right.
that was a really powerful scene. Yeah. But and this isn't necessarily Frances's fault, but the problems personally that I had with the movie was the uneven tone of it. Of it's like this heavy thing and then wacky jokes. I was like, that took me out of it. I couldn't give her Best Actress for that for me personally, because again, what you said, Sally Hawkins, the job, the emotions she conveys without talking,
right,
is the best acting.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Of the people in that category, in my opinion.
And, Margot Robbie did a good job. You know, Saoirse Ronan did a good job. But I'll tell you, The Post, you know, The Post was one of those movies where you thought when you saw who was behind it, Spielberg, Hanks, Streep, it was going to be this crazy slam dunk of an amazing emotional movie, and it was flat.
It was kind of like the Margaret Thatcher movie she did a couple years ago.
You know,
good, decent. She's an amazing actress.
It was good,
but like,
not horrible, but like, well, you know, it really didn't.
But compare it to Spotlight.
I was just going to say that. If you compare it to Spotlight.
You're gripped. You're the whole time.
You are literally on the edge of your seat for Spotlight. And, you know, that scene with Mark Ruffalo yelling at Michael Keaton, it could have been your kid. It could have been my kid. It could have been one of us. I mean, it's such a powerful emotional scene. There's none of those scenes in The Post.
Well, that's the thing, too. That the Spotlight is such a great example. Oof. Every single...
That's a newsroom drama.
Yeah. The entire cast was amazing. And again, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, great. But like the scene where Michael Keaton, I mean, he has so many great scenes. The scenes with Paul Guilfoyle.
He's the anchor of the entire thing.
At the bar.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy comes in and he goes, so this is how it works? Mike, guy leans on a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That subtle racist speech of like, hey, he's from Miami. He's not one of us. We know what that means, Jew. You know what I'm saying? You know what he's with?
Sure.
You know, as white guys, we know when another white guy says that he's being a racist fuck.
Yeah.
You know, the scene where Michael Keaton has to own the fact that he buried one of these stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have to see that look on his face where he has to. And they're all Irish Catholics.
Right.
Sans Mark Ruffalo and Stanley Tucci. I mean, even that scene with Stanley Tucci where they're at the restaurant. And he goes, these people think they're so much better than everyone else. Look how they treat their kids. You know what I mean? Like,
now, the emotion you've shown in literally like in 70 seconds talking about Spotlight is more than the entire film, The Post. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just the entire film, The Post, it just happens.
It's flat.
It happens.
Flat.
Yeah, yeah. You just, all right, well, this is, and you know what it's going to be. The beats, you know it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it was like I said it before, it was just like watching people at work. Yeah. It was like, you know, you're all right, all right, this is how people make a movie. I'm watching Tom Hanks at work. I'm watching Meryl Streep at work. I never got into the story. Never got into the characters. And it just, it wasn't a terrible movie. It was just flat.
You know what it is? Yeah. It's like watching an amazing athlete, like LeBron James or Michael Jordan. This is a regular season game. It ain't the play. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he had 25 points. Yeah. It wasn't some like double overtime. He made the last shot with three guys in his face. Yeah. It was just sort of like, yeah, they played
a yeoman performance.
Exactly.
For superstars, you know, for brilliance. They played to the level of what they had. I mean, it's just, you know, they Milton Berle'd it. You know, they only took out enough to win.
Right. So, actor in a leading role. Now, this one, surprise.
I'm sorry, before we move on from actress. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with Frances McDormand in Fargo.
Yes.
Like that weird.
I agree.
Like when I mean, but I mean that thing inside you where you're like, I want somebody like that. And I love her.
I bet that's your partner in the wood chipper there.
Yeah. Oh, you want to protect her. You want great things for her. You're happy at the end when he gets the, you know, the tree scent stamp and she makes him, he makes her breakfast. I mean, just, it's such love. And I fell in love with her and that character. And then subsequently in movies I've seen her, I've loved her all the time. But then I equate that to I See Shape of Water. And I fall in love with her.
Yeah.
I have the same feeling I had that I had watching Frances McDormand in Fargo, where I want good things. I want, please, like, good things happen. Please, I don't give a care if she's fucking a fish, fine, whatever the hell. She deserves all good things. She's lived a life of quiet solitude and you know, eggs and finger blasting, and good for you. That's fine. And if you find a fish who makes you happy, that's great. Because you're sobbing, going, please,
you're
please.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know they're not going to betray you with some, you know, 11th hour destruction of her dream. I mean, but it's still, the ride to get there is so brilliant and so great.
Look at her best friend. Her best friend is Richard Jenkins.
Yeah.
Like, what a character you root for.
So great.
You know, and what she has to do at that work.
I just watched Shape of Water last night. I mean, I hadn't seen it. And so I just sat there, I'm sobbing in my house, just transfixed by her and everything she did.
Right.
She's so great. And you fall, like I said, you fall in love with that character, with her.
Yes.
And so I thought it was interesting that I, again, had that feeling from McDormand and Fargo, and watching Three Billboards, I had a feeling that I was watching Frances McDormand's mom from Almost Famous in a different film. Because that's kind of her stock in trade now, is the jut jawed, tough woman, plain spoken, who's going to fucking get it done. You know what I mean? And she can be cursy, she can be mean, but she's amped it up in Three Billboards, obviously.
Right, right.
And she's terrific. She's so good.
And, you know, she plays broken really well.
Yes,
too.
But that's the thing. Then you see it the third time and you go, oh yeah, that's her doing that Frances McDormand thing. It's a dangerous trap to get into for an actor or an actress because I love what she did. I really liked Three Billboards and I thought she's amazing at it. But that's Sophie Hawkins, is that her name?
Sally Hawkins. Yeah.
Holy God. I mean, you want to hug her. You want to just find her and just thank her.
What you're talking about is that thing of when you can't picture the actor in any other role when you're watching
IMDb'd her after the movie.
Yes.
And then almost went, I don't want to know. I don't want to know if I've seen her in anything else.
And you have.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've literally seen her in things like...
She was in Godzilla.
Yeah. And Paddington.
I sat through that garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was in Paddington, and then she was also in that Woody Allen movie.
And also, I don't know if I want her to talk ever. In another film, I want her to be that character in every movie. To be affected and moved and fall in love with someone. I get it. I wish she'd have won for
and
that.
And I think, and again, not to take, Frances McDormand is fantastic. I mean, I fell in love with her in Raising Arizona.
My God, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Has he had his dip tan? I really like her, but that's the thing. And this is, we've talked about this before. It is a trap of a big A-list Oscar pedigree actor. It's like The Post. I'm watching, there's Tom Hanks.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? There's Frances McDormand doing Frances McDormand.
Yes.
Right.
You know, versus Sally Hawkins. Now, she's not A-list. She's played a lot of supporting characters. Mm-hmm. This is her breakout, obviously. But that's the difference, is the actor when...
Supporting to a lot of CG creatures.
Yeah, a lot of CG creatures. But that character, when you can be that actor that goes, wow, I can't think of any of their other work in this when I'm watching this part.
Exactly.
And if you, the fact that you can see a story about a woman who falls in love with a monster, a merman monster, and it's legendary Frankenstein, you know, all these movies have that, but that scene with the record player and the, and she gives him the one egg and he snatches it and he goes away. And then she comes back and she lines up like the eight eggs the next, you know, that one time. And then she, the record player, the joy on her face when she stops the music and he acknowledges what music is. And then she puts it back down and he likes it. And then she takes it off and she's being playful. Like she's never feared him. She never feared him. She, you know, he's getting cattle prodded and bleeding and he's a monster. And, you know, he's the asset. He's always dehumanized, even though he's not human, but she humanizes him.
Right.
And from the jump, like the second they roll him in, she's on board.
And, you know, and in return, she gets humanized by the creature.
Well, the other thing, too, is like she's portrayed in the beginning. She's introduced as this meek little weak, and she fights hard. She's tough as nails, man. She's like, no, not backing down. This is, I'm in love with this fish, dude. This is how this is going to shake.
I'm going to save him.
This is my moment. This is what my life is. Because she even says that in the thing where she says he sees me through all my incompleteness. I think it is when she has the thing.
She doesn't know that there's something missing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't know there's something
missing. When he shrieks at her in the beginning, she just kind of stands up and looks at him like, well, that's happening now. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's so. And I was actually confused for a second. I go, oh, she can't hear him. Mm-hmm. She couldn't hear the crazy blood-curdling shriek. But then I went, no, she's a mute. She can absolutely hear him.
Yeah, yeah.
She just wasn't
afraid. She just can't talk.
And she didn't recoil. Yeah, it's, well, God.
Guys, guess what we have? We gotta take care of some business.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Oh. We've got a couple sponsors today. Why don't we mix it up a little bit and do the Patreon sponsors first?
About them? They're paying us $50 a month. Thank you so much, guys. You get your stuff read if you go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
Let's do it. Ready? The Audacity Performing Arts Project, a nonprofit working to bring after-school performing arts programs to public schools. They serve the schools who cannot afford their services. They rely on community donations to keep the programs alive. CFN fans who support Audacity with a $25 donation, normally $30, receive an amazing Audacity t-shirt. Visit cfn.audacityperformingarts.org to learn more.
Support independent arts, you guys, and support the show.
And also we have supplyanddemandinvesting.com, supplyanddemandinvesting.com, because planning for retirement should be as easy as planning your next vacation. It just takes longer. And now we have a third one, but they'll only be here for 1 month. It's a limited time read. This is from Will Leonard. His wife, Katie Bagwell, has signed up for Bike MS. So another charity, which is fantastic. A fundraising ride that is changing the lives of people affected by MS and helping fuel progress toward a world free of MS, drive from Houston to Austin at the end of April. The money raised will help fund amazing progress in MS research, as well as programs and services that ensure people affected by MS can live their best lives. You can reach her donation page. Now this is one of those bit.lys. It's bit.ly/KTMS150. That's bit.ly/KTMS150. If you can, please help her achieve her goal.
Yeah.
Now, look, I've been here a lot. I like to consider myself almost a regular guest. And maybe I rub people the wrong way sometimes.
No, Mike. No. You've
never done that. But to have an entire event to bike against me, that seems really strange. To eradicate Mike Schmidt. That I don't appreciate that at all.
And to fund research against it.
Right.
I'm all for it.
What the?
And I think we should end Mike Schmidt now. No, but I can tell you, I did a...
You want to end me? Get me on a bike. We'll do that. Finished.
But I did a fundraising marathon years, like 10 years ago. It's a really cool, rewarding thing. And to support that is really cool. So you guys can just help somebody that you've never met, support a cause that needs your help.
All right. Now the other advertisers. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Bombfell this week.
Oh, yeah.
Bombfell is an easier way for men to get better clothes. You do a questionnaire, then you're matched one-on-one with a stylist, and you get free shipping and returns, convenient home try-on, and the ability to preview and edit your stylist picks before your order ships. Now, Graham,
I love a limited-time ascot. Send me an ascot. I'll wear it around for a while. If I don't like it, I send it back.
You sign up. You set up your order. You get a preview email, and you receive your clothing.
Somebody buy Mike Schmidt an ascot. Oh, yeah. Somebody go to Bombfell and buy Mike Schmidt an ascot.
And then come to my house and measure me. Please measure me.
Yes, he deserves one. So it'll be like the date from Phantom Thread.
Just not too much movement over toast.
Yes. So now, Graham, you actually got
a
Bombfell package. So
I've done
Bombfell. How did you enjoy it?
Yeah,
how's the quality?
It's really good stuff. And like I remember, it was really good customer service. I got one. I think it was a shirt. Just didn't fit. Sent it back. No problem. Very easy. Got a pair of slacks that I really enjoyed.
Ooh, slacks.
Slacks. Mm-hmm. So I upped my wardrobe.
Did it have a hidden message in it?
Yes. Yes, don't see Phantom Thread.
Persevere.
Persevere. Always talk about socialism.
So now, you liked the stuff that the stylist picked for you, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The stylist did a good job. You go and fill out a questionnaire, and then a stylist contacts you, and you know, so it's great because they're not like forcing, like, you should wear this. Like, if you're like, I don't like that, they won't.
Can you imagine if they called you and used that voice? You should wear this.
Why are you wearing this?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, the question, why are you dressed like that?
The questionnaire is pretty simple. It's a lot of yes and no. And then at the end, you can kind of, there's a box that says express yourself a little bit. And Graham just wrote, I like Batman stuff.
Yeah. So they just sent me a bunch of Batman.
He got a Riddler suit with question marks all over it. This amazing Joker suit with tails purple.
Yeah.
I got a Harley Quinn Esquad. Really, yeah. Fantastic. Yes.
So a big Bane outfit.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take control of your advertising.
Do you feel in charge?
And? Oh,
the greatest, most badass villain scene ever. Yeah. Just lightly puts his hand on the shoulder. It is the most, that is the scariest move I've ever seen a villain do. Do you feel in charge?
Do you feel in charge? Mm-hmm.
Just lightly puts his hand on your shoulder going, you're going to die.
Guess what? Bad news. I hope you didn't like that
this
trick.
This isn't going to end well.
I'm going to take a closer look at it.
You're not going to see the second hand.
Yeah. So we are going to take control and charge of a special offer for CFN fans.
Great segue.
Yeah. You can use the URL bombfell.com/CFN. $25 off your first purchase, Graham. $25 off bombfell/CFN.
That pays for your ascot.
bombfell.com/CFN. See if they have an ascot. They may.
It's a great way. If you're going to use any of these products and you use our coupon codes and the URLs, that's a great, then they're tracking that. So they know that the advertising works. Also, you can go to the Patreon, support all that. Great. So many ways to support the show and get yourself a Batman ascot.
Yeah. Now, we got a double advertiser.
Double
this
trouble.
Is, yeah. Hold this on. Is a this is a double header, Graham.
Boom.
We've got ZipRecruiter. Mm-hmm. Now, we all know about ZipRecruiter. It's hard to find good help. We know that. ZipRecruiter knows what you're looking for. It identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job.
Now, you're saying ZipRecruiter.
Yes.
Because I've always heard Bill call it recruiter. So I always thought it had an H at the end, but you got a hard
Zip
R.
ZipRecruiter.
Yes. ZipRecruiter.
In fact, 80% of employees who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day.
You know, if you're a small business owner, you got to use something like this because you can't afford a big recruiting company.
And it takes forever to find the right person.
Yeah, and you don't want to just be stuck with like some intern that you just have to hire. You know what I mean?
I'm right here, guys.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Oh, he's got a microphone now.
I thought we turned that mic off.
And the right candidates are out there.
The intern is self-aware.
ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Now, this is another great way to try it for free. All you got to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So do it. Get your kitten hands. Go to ZipRecruiter. Type it in.
Hire some people. Get some clothes.
Yep. And you're all set.
Yeah. Support it.
And then jump on a bike and support Banning Mike Schmidt.
Ban Mike Schmidt. Support the arts.
Yeah.
Investing. Whatever you need. We've got it, guys.
Yeah, no kidding. You guys are covered.
All right. That concludes our business. So let's get back to the categories. Now, we were on actor in a leading role. Now, this one was no surprise with Gary Oldman. This, and I'll tell you, as brilliant as the makeup was, it was really his performance that sold the entire thing, for sure. I thought he did a really nice job.
Well, Gary Oldman is one of these guys, the conversation of he's one of those guys when whoever he plays, when I was watching Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, I can't picture him as Commissioner Gordon.
Right, exactly.
Not to mention, I mean, Darkest Hour, obviously, because there's a prosthetic thing happening.
Right.
But again, even his performance, his voice, if he just had like a weird Churchill hat on and no makeup.
Right.
And was going.
You'd pull it off.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You're not going, oh, there's Gary Oldman.
No.
Right.
You're going, there's Winston Churchill.
I've only done that once in my life, and it was at Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
I got out of my car, and I stood up, and he was getting in. His car was right next to mine, and I literally stood up in his face. And I went, whoa. And he goes, yeah.
That's why I like him even better.
And he's with his kid. And I was just like, all right, well, I love your work. And I literally just, because I was scared. I ran into Trader Joe's. I ran away. Because I mean, he's with his child. I didn't want to be a bother. But literally, I stood up into his face. And just, you know, whoa. Yeah.
That's how you should respond.
It was great.
Did he
oh,
say
my
he was,
God.
Did he yeah, say he was right. going to get on a bike?
Yeah, it might have been. I was like, well, I really love what you do. And he's like, thank you. And I just walked away. Yeah.
That'd be great if he would have just gut punched you.
I would have taken it.
You
that's
like
what
it
I
now?
Said I'm going to take. Do it, Oldman.
But even like what you're saying too, like when he played Commissioner Gordon in the Dark Knight movies, I never thought, oh, that's Gary Oldman. I'm like, oh no, that's Commissioner Gordon.
That's
Drexel
Gordon.
Spivey.
I know exactly. Mm-hmm.
Drexel fucking Spivey.
Drexel Spivey is the guy that just won the Oscar for playing Churchill.
Gorgeous.
You know what I mean? And he's fantastic in all these parts. That's the difference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He's not Gary Oldman doing his Gary Oldman thing very well. He's being an amazing actor who is completely believable in all of the different parts that he plays.
Right.
Now, do you think that everyone voted for him?
You mean, was it unanimous?
Everyone! Sorry.
Oh,
I backed away even.
Not enough.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, my God, our poor fans.
Wow. Wow, we're so sorry.
Sorry.
So, yeah. Usually I'm the guy that blows out
people's
ears.
But Google it, and it was worth it.
Yeah. yeah. I'm hoping no one was driving right
I'm
now.
I'm sorry, everybody.
My ears hurt, and I don't have headphones on.
No.
Do you think I should
God.
Apologize to everyone?
No, Mike, no.
That is the best 4 seconds of a movie ever made. Just, oh, my Christ.
What film is that from?
Aaron? Is that from The Professional? Yes.
All right.
Get everyone.
Everyone.
And Oldman wheels and he just goes, everyone! Like right in this dude's face. It's so perfect. It's so perfect. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah. So you also have Timothy Chalamet. You had Daniel Day-Lewis, Daniel Kaluuya, and Denzel Washington. So you definitely had an interesting mix of actors here in the leading role.
The thing I said about Denzel and Roman J. Israel, he's a great actor, but I really liked it because he wasn't playing.
It's too bad the movie wasn't better.
The movie was just too uneven, but it's worth watching just for his performance because he's not being typical Denzel badass, you know, mm-hmm. I'm kicking ass and taking names. He's playing a guy with Asperger's who's quirky and awkward and weird. And
isn't that a weird thing that sometimes. Because Denzel Washington is a charisma volcano.
Right.
It's just, and like The Rock is kind of like that. Like those dudes who you're like, it almost betrays them in trying to be contained, even on a big screen. I mean, mm-hmm. Denzel Washington is that guy. He's just ready. You're just ready for him to be that, you know, all the mm-hmm. time. And so I don't know anything at all about this movie. Literally, I saw billboards and then the clip on the Oscar show. I wouldn't know mm-hmm. anything about it. But with Denzel, you're waiting for that moment. You're waiting for him to give himself over to that. And I mean, again, you think of Training Day, and even on the Oscars when he's in the montage, you're like that 5 seconds stole the show. You know, it's just he's so good. So
when he won, what was it the last couple of years ago? What was it, Flight, where he played the drug addict pilot that saved everybody in the.
Oh Christ! Yeah,
that was he was amazing in that playing a guy.
But that's when the charisma can work against. So it's great that you're saying it's like he was able to portray a different character completely. But imagine how hard it is for him. To subsume, to stop being that. That's got to be insane because he's just this walking sunbeam. It's insane.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's do.
So you, all right, because I don't know, like, I know nothing about Call Me By Your Name. All right, I know that I found everybody, a lot of people, there was a lot of hype, a lot of people loved it, a lot of all that stuff, but then it didn't win anything. So
it won adapted screenplay.
Okay. Oh, that's right. I remember that James Ivory came up. Well, that's because they wanted to see him toddle up in his penguin outfit and do a speech. Nobody liked that movie. They're just like, bring that guy up so people can hear he's not English and freak out. But is that movie good? Is that a good movie?
So I actually
we've had a couple guests that saw it that really liked it.
Really
we never
it.
Got the chance mm-hmm. to see it. So
okay.
It's one of the ones we missed. So actress in a supporting role. We had Mary J. Blige, Allison Janney, Leslie Manville, Laurie Metcalf, and Octavia Spencer. Now, this, I honestly, was a decent category. It's been stronger in other years, for sure. I thought Allison Janney just kind of had it as a lock. I mean, Laurie Metcalf did a good job in Lady Bird. Mary J. Blige did a great job in Mudbound, but the movie itself wasn't fantastic.
Yeah, I think that always hurts some of these categories when the movie isn't like... every critic thought it was amazing. I think that can even if this individual performance is really good, I think that always just kind of
It hurts chances for sure.
Well, and also because maybe Academy guys go, well, then I don't need to watch that movie. And then it also leads them to not vote for that person. So they can dismiss it out of hand.
Yep. I think that happens a lot. So I thought Alice and Johnny definitely was a lock for her.
But I don't know. I watched I, Tonya, and I just didn't. It could have been Romeoville, Illinois, the movie. I mean, I hated everybody in it. I hated everything they did. It was just this pile of hillbillies doing garbage nonsense
pile
to one
haircuts,
another.
Jackie Cation.
Just a mess. Just a tornado of
but
filth.
I think,
it was so bad. Just
but that was intentional.
And grimy mustaches. I get it, but I don't need to see that on a big screen. I don't think, and I get Margot Robbie's deal was like she thought the story was really interesting, and
we're
powerful.
At the age where we remember the actual event.
Of course
too.
We do, and it was very powerful when Margot Robbie did the speech about you were all my abusers too. You're culpable because as we get older, because I was talking about in stand-up. I used to make fun of celebrities like slash and burn, anything that bad that happened to them, I did. I made fun of Michael Jordan's dad when he got killed. I mean, it's terrible. But when Sean Penn's house burned down, I did a bit about it. And then I came home that night and I was just like, what are you doing? The guy's house burned down. Granted, he's got 10 houses and all that other stuff. But I was like, that's still a person. It was this weird epiphanal moment. And so in that, when she says the thing about, you're all my abusers too. And there's that part where the Letterman monologue is playing while she's sitting there and she has to hear herself being carved to pieces. And I get it that there's a reason she became that person. It's because Allison Janney. But Allison Janney was just, a terrible, terrible person. Is that worth this award? I mean, she just turned up the hatred to 11. I don't know.
Well, I think it was a little more nuanced than that.
Because Allison Janney's amazing. She's a great actress.
She is. I really felt like it was, it got into more of like, yeah, she was a monster for sure. But it got into her motivations of like, is this the way she's showing love?
But are those motivations or is she just a narcissist excusing her own fucking behaviors?
Absolutely. But it makes her slightly more complex than just that she's mean all the time.
Right. Just you had a bad mom. And when you see to me when that type of because this her mom, the actual mom, at the end. Of
oh,
the,
sure.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. So but you always ask yourself when you hear the stories about a mom like that, like, God, what how was she like that? Allison Janney, I thought, because she's such a great actress and the script, showed us, I believe, like, the actor has to go, I have to believe this, right? Like, this is acting 101. I have to believe this. You can't just be, I'm an evil mom, because then it's sort of like, it's a two-dimensional bad, evil character.
Yeah.
So what Allison Janney had to go, what would motivate this woman to treat her own child this way? And Allison Janney, in my opinion at least, did a good job of, she really believes I'm doing this out of love. I'm being a good parent. Even
that's what she knew to
right.
do.
Yeah.
Even though it's horrifying. And she probably had had a horrible.
And there was that speech too of like, well, I was this way as a sacrifice, to help you. I'm like, that's
but again,
how you're justifying it?
But again, all
it?
Garbage. Yeah, garbage. But you're right. I'm holding my bias for the movie against the performance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because again, everybody's terrible in it. Everybody. And they play the Sean Eckhart for such, and he might've been that person. And again, we see the clip later where he is that person, but he's just a dope. You know what I mean? Everybody's just dumb. It was almost like, what was the movie a few years ago where it was that thing where you're just like, it's just this cat, like Logan Lucky kind of has that vibe too, where it's just this, just hurricane of stupid.
Right.
Right.
And you're just like, oh Christ. Well, but these
just not done well.
Yeah. But I mean, and then the Galooly slapping her around and punching her and all that, but it showed why she became the person she became. So yes, I'm holding my bias for the film.
Mm-hmm. If I'm hearing Mike Schmidt correctly on this episode, he doesn't want to watch anything that's too real. He wants to live in. You want to look at the nice fancy clothes. And
I did. You know what? I had a twinge of that. I mean, I won't lie. There's enough awful. So when I got to watch I, Tonya, it's just in my head. I'm like, I got to stand behind these people in line at the grocery store. Why do I got to watch them punch each other on the screen and try to make it interesting? It may be too real. Maybe it lands for me. Maybe I grew up around that kind of stuff and that those shitty couches and those bad clocks and everything else that you saw in the decor. Cause it was a nightmare. I mean, where she lived and all that. I mean, I grew up in Romanville. It's that those small flat houses and just
everyone's just a dead end train wreck.
Everybody and nobody, the two clueless parents of Eckhart, and then the two idiots, the club Kerrigan, and those guys are idiots. And again, like I said, it's just this never ending waterfall of dumb, and you're just like, oh Christ, I can't. So I couldn't, I mean, you have to watch it from a distance. You know what I mean? You can't, like the other movie, like I said, Shape of Water, I might as well have been in the hallway all the time. And Michael Shannon's a monster and you're rooting. So there's rooting interest. There's nobody to root for in I, Tonya.
No.
Nobody at all.
No. And it's deliberately set up and structured that way, especially with the, you know, the breaking of that fourth wall when they actually, she addresses the audience in a number of times.
It was very much reminded me of, what was the Nicole Kidman movie where she's the reporter who winds up being the ice princess who then convinces the kids. It's a true story. She convinces the kids to kill her husband. I don't know, but it was told in that same exact style, right? Almost, you know what I mean?
I think didn't David Cronenberg play the hitman?
I think so, yeah. So irredeemable. I mean,
Aaron,
nobody.
See if you
there.
Can find that movie.
Kidman and
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was just told in the same way, and it's that same thing where it's a manipulative person gets these horrible people to do terrible things. Mm-hmm. I understand, but the world is like this. So maybe you're right. Maybe it does land a little close for me. I found it to be awful. Like all of it was just, so grimy. But with this winking at the grime as if we're all, we're all in on the joke on this, right? I mean, you know, you're trying to give me the terrible story of a woman who was abused by her mom forever and took it stoically, you know, with a chin up and just, well, this is the way it's always been.
And then abused by her husband.
And then abused by the public in America. Mm-hmm. But then we're supposed to laugh at the Sean Eckhart, you know, terrorism subterfuge, all that, you know, we're supposed to, it's played for laughs. And I'm like, there's nothing funny here. None of this is good or, you know, I understand she took it on the jaw with a stiff upper lip.
It definitely went for a Fargo vibe. I can see that too. It definitely tried to kind of straddle that line of this is, you know, some horrific crimes going on, but also you can laugh at these characters.
I guess the way I heard it was that, you know, they were kind of redeeming Tonya Harding a little bit by doing this film. Mm-hmm. But instead, we're all Nelson Muntz. You know what I mean? We're trying to get to this poor woman who's abused her entire life, but we're still told to go, ha ha ha. Yeah, that's hilarious. You know what I mean?
You know what I think the movie tried to do, like you said about tone earlier with the three billboards.
I don't know
if that was necessarily the case. I think what the movie tried to do, instead of actually redeeming her, I think it tried to humanize her. And then just with someone that was involved in this conspiracy to get rid of Nancy Kerrigan. I felt like it was just trying to show the human face of like how she ended up the way she was. But I feel like the movie, though, did do a good job of not excusing her and not excusing any of her behavior.
Because what the movie, in my opinion, was trying to do, and I thought it did this quite well. I didn't think this movie, I liked this film. I liked it more than Three Billboards because it's a true story. I forgave it, the joke part of it, or the ha-ha part of it, Mike, more than Three Billboards because, again, Three Billboards is trying to deal with a heavy subject. This does happen. Women are, you know, murdered. And
I, Tonya, the humor was much more well organically woven in.
Well, it was woven into the fact that this is these people. If it was a fiction story, I'd be like, this isn't believable. This is ridiculous. But these people did exist. And they show the interview of the guy. I mean, that guy... Yeah, man, I'm a terrorist. You know, like, yeah. Wow. You know, I work special forces. No, you don't. Yeah.
No, I do.
I can't talk about it.
Yeah, well, that's there's no record. You're out of your mind. You know, so I bought it a little more because what Chris is talking about, why it was interesting for me, because it took the presumption, and this is a fair presumption to make, we all only knew her through the eyes of the media. She was portrayed in this certain way by the media and by the David Lettermans of the world and all that stuff. That was right when all the late night shows were starting. So everybody had a Tonya Harding joke. And we got to see, without, as Chris said, without excusing her, I was like, wow, she did some stupid, dumb things, but I get it. I get it. And the figure skating world is kind of bullshit a little bit.
Sure.
And she didn't make it easier on herself. you know what I mean?
Like, well, but also she couldn't be what she wasn't. You know, and that was the thing. She's proud of her environment. She's raised by that monster. So then she tries to fit in this gilded cage with everybody else. And she was never going to do that. Mm-hmm. So I see the interest in the story from that angle. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't find it. Even the judges. I mean, the mom pays that guy to heckle her at the thing. Come on, really? Right. At the world championships? That way? I mean, that just seemed like such a narrative note that didn't belong there. I mean, I
think some of that was, you know, just the Hollywood.
Right, but we already know she's a, we already hate her. Why are you gonna make now you want me to get her rubbed out? You know what I mean? Like Allison Janney, now you really hate her. You want her dead. I mean, it's just like, what are you doing? Leave her alone finally. And then when she finally shows up to tape her, and you know she's gonna, you know that's a thing. Because she's not going to do that 180 and just show up and go, hey, I love you, I'm proud of you. She wants something. So you're just it was unsuccessful in diverting me. I was like, all right, well, where's the, what's going to happen here? Because nobody, again, she's not a good person, and we know it.
All right.
To die for was the
to die for. I knew it was three words.
Yes. To die for. Mm-hmm. A couple more, and then we'll wrap it up here.
That sounds good. We'll do actor in a supporting role. This one went to Sam Rockwell for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Now, this I thought was one of the strongest categories in the Oscars. I thought all these performances were pretty solid. Now, I will say this because I did some reading about Sam Rockwell, and one of the criticisms that this film is getting is that there was too much of an arc for Sam Rockwell as far as becoming a racist and then becoming like kind of like a more redeemable and heroic character towards the end. Now, the director defended his decision and said, look, racists don't change overnight. His arc was not that he wasn't a racist anymore. His arc was that he was a racist and that through the events of the film realized that he had to change. So I thought, you know, that explanation, I kind of bought it. I thought that was a really interesting way to kind of look at the film. I felt the end of the film, you know, spoiler, was a little bit of like kind of up in the air. Like we didn't really get an ending to the film. Like, you know, are they about to commit murder or not? That's kind of a big deal, you know? But I thought his performance, taking that part aside that you're talking about, Graham, where it seems like he got a punch-up writer and all of a sudden just make him dumber and sillier. Like if all that was taken out, I thought the performance would have been even better. But I still liked the performance, and I thought
I love Sam Rockwell. Mm-hmm. This role, especially, read the other nominees in this category.
The other nominees were Christopher Plummer, Richard Jenkins, Woody Harrelson, and Willem Dafoe. Also, very rare that you're competing against someone else in your own film.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the thing. I think I don't know. Three Billboards, as I've said. It's a decent film, but I think it got way more
accolades than it
deserved. I just think there were so many other better performances out there that never even got nominated, to where two people from that movie, that uneven film.
I liked that movie. I wound up liking it a lot, actually, but also because I heard polarizing. I heard people who really like it. Or people hate it. A lot of comedians and a lot of creatives hate it.
Interesting.
That was where I heard that from, because that's who I run with. I'm just like, really? It's that? Because I saw the trailer and was in. Mm-hmm. It is an uneven. The Sam Rockwell character is completely uneven.
Yes.
He's a bumbling, racist, evil, Otis the drunk type character in the beginning. And then by the end, he's crying, you know what I mean, on the phone. If you're the director, how gold is that moment when he said he's not your rapist, but he's a rapist. I know that. And you just see the one tear in the bedroom light come down. It's, oh my God, if you're literally, it's that moment where you just, Robert Downey Jr. and Natural Born Killers, when he goes, everybody in the fucking world just saw that, mate. It's like when Sam Rockwell, you know what I mean? Because shit, man, I'm a natural born killer. And then they go to commercial and he's just like, he's so happy. Well, when the tear comes down, but by the end, I don't think he's redeemed. I as a racist, certainly, because it is, if like the bad guys are, you know, black, or, you know, if it's that stark of a contrast, then I could see where people would be upset. He's not redeemed. He's still a dope.
Right.
But he has a moment of humanity where he's just like, what am I doing?
Right.
The letter wakes him up, and then he has a near-death experience, and then
he realizes he needs to change.
Well, yeah. He faces what he did to that kid in the hospital room. He sees him, and just, because now he's in the same position. He's like, I did that. I mean, I did that. I mean, I want to believe even the worst people can have moments of clarity where they go, oh man, I got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
And so I was on board, and honestly, he should have won this for Moon. So good for him. Or for Frost Nixon. He's so good in Frost Nixon. He's a good actor. He's a genius.
There's
he's good
so
at everything.
Many great. He's, yeah. He's
a solid actor.
Oh my
he's a
God.
Solid actor.
He's the best.
He's getting one of the, I mean, literally the way back or the way back.
Yeah.
He's great in the way
back machine.
The way back machine. No, but I mean, he's great in that. That scene, how he takes care of that kid in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Tin Man. I love him. I mean, like, I you know.
He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. Just, he's another one like Oldman.
Yeah.
Where you just, you're not like, oh, he's doing that Sam Rockwell thing. You're just like, oh, he's just great.
You can even go back to like Charlie's Angels where you're like, oh, this movie's terrible, but oh, Sam Rockwell's really interesting.
He's interesting is a really good word.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy who approaches things from like a different place, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, Woody Harrelson did a job. I don't know if that's a nominated performance, but I thought he did a good job. And also, I think Sam Rockwell's more of a leading actor than a supporting actor in this film. I mean, he's the consistent male presence throughout the entire thing. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's more strategy. This is the
submit
yourself in the supporting role because you have a better shot.
And also it's Frances McDormand's movie. I mean, really, anyone else other than that is supporting. Yeah. Okay, a couple more. We'll do our original screenplay. This was Get Out won this, and we kind of saw this coming
if it didn't, I had to leave with that.
You look at all the screenplays here, The Big Sick, Get Out, Lady Bird, Shape of Water, and Three Billboards. It also had to do with, I think, is that like, well, we're not going to give Get Out any of these other awards. Let's give them the screenplay award.
And if you look at that, like, so Big Sick isn't very original because it's their actual story that they went through. Mm-hmm. Shape of Water, obviously very, very,
very original.
Mm-hmm. Lady Bird, but with roots in Frankenstein, in old classic horror.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing. So that's that. There's which doesn't make it a bad movie, but is it the best original screenplay?
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, and same thing with Lady Bird. I like it, but I've seen
coming of age.
I've seen coming
like
of age teen mm-hmm. dramas before. It has a lot of the same beats. They're executed very well. They're very good actors. But Get Out, we've never seen a movie like Get Out.
Right. So it's Get Out, Shape. What was the, and we're missing one that you
made. Big Sick, Shape of Water, Lady Bird, and Three Billboards.
And Three Billboards. Three Billboards is it's an acting movie.
Right.
It's not a story movie.
No.
Right.
You know, there's no real story except woman is mad.
Yeah. The screenplay is its weakest part, in my opinion.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter because with those actors, it's going to sing no matter what. You're going to make it work.
I was happy to see that.
But this is a thing where like they could have given Wind River a nod here.
Right.
Wind River could have got a nomination here. It should have got a nomination for Best Picture. They could have done nine. They could have kept in Mike's fucking toast clothes movie.
Yeah.
And given Wind River something.
Hostels could have been in here somewhere, too.
Absolutely. Hostels could have been in there. Like this
Florida
is the
Project?
Florida Project only got nominated for...
But is that... Because I'm being told that was the biggest snub
Defoe
of all time.
It got nominated for actor and supporting. That's the only nomination.
It's good. I mean, it's a really solid film. It moves very slow because it's through the eyes of a seven-year-old girl. So there's a lot of like... I get it. Yeah, she lives in a shitty situation, and she's just a kid having fun, trying to figure it out. But there's not a big story arc.
I see.
Without giving stuff away, I mean, it's a good movie, and it's very well.
So it's like a poor kid.
They live near Disney World, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like.
What is her breakfast like?
Is it quiet or loud?
It's a loud movie. I don't know if Mike would like it. There's a lot of loud breakfasts. So it's really worth watching, but it's one of the, what's that story? A Story of a Boy, the Linkletter movie?
Boyhood.
It's like that without the 16 years and the kid growing up. You know how Boyhood just kind of moves slowly?
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of shows this is the kid's life.
Yeah.
And you see some of these adults and we don't quite know that much. We see them a little bit. It's like that, but for three acts and the girl stays the same age because it just takes place over a short amount of time. It takes place over like a couple of months.
Right.
So that's the only time where I'm watching the movie and I'm like, huh, is something going to happen? I mean, is something going to happen? And not that every movie needs to have like, oh my God, they find a bag of money and who's, you know, like.
It doesn't need a hurricane heist.
No, it doesn't need a hurricane heist, but that's the one thing that held it back. But I do agree it could have gotten more nominations in there than just Willem Dafoe.
Just Willem Dafoe, yeah. Okay. Do adapted screenplay. This is we Call Me By Your Name one. Disaster Artist, Logan, Molly's Game, Mudbound. So nice to see Logan nominated here.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Agreed. Loved
it. So that was one of the times whenever you see a comic book / superhero movie nominated for anything, you're like, oh, some people actually saw this. But it was a really good movie. You know, it's one of those movies that transcends the genre. Like, you know, Christopher Nolan's, was Dark Knight. That was the one with the Joker, right?
Yeah, Dark Knight.
Yeah. So, when it transcends its own genre, you know, it should be recognized for that. And I think this movie did that for sure.
Yeah, it's so cool because it's not a Marvel. I mean, it is a Marvel movie, but it wasn't like a big Marvel.
It's a Fox movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a big Marvel blockbuster. It was like a
technically now it's Disney.
Intense. Yeah.
but
what isn't?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's I saw that and Get Out the same day.
And it wasn't.
I went to the movie theater and watched them both. I was just like, oh
and
my
like
God.
You said, it wasn't a giant epic like we're saving the world kind of
big
movie.
Explosion.
Yeah,
big,
yeah. At the end, you know, you're not fighting apocalypse at the end, you know.
But it was real. Mm-hmm. It was a character piece. It was a character
right.
driven.
Yeah, it was a small movie with big parts.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and Call Me by Your Name one. Want to do animated feature and then
sure.
wrap it up. Okay, animated feature. We had Boss Baby, Breadwinner, Coco, Ferdinand, and Loving Vincent. Coco definitely won. Now, I thought Coco was fantastic. It was definitely Pixar's. You know, they've had a couple of mediocre movies, way too many Cars movies. You know, with the Good Dinosaur, there's definitely been a few misfires. This one I thought was like classic Pixar, back to form. It just made you tear up, made you feel, and it was just a really good movie. And also, what I liked about it too, it did that perfect mix of showing the culture of Mexico, but not like throwing it in your face, like, see, we're giving you a diverse movie. We're giving you a movie about Mexican culture. No, it was a great story about family, and it just happened to have the backdrop of Mexican culture and Day of the Dead and all those things. And it really put everything together nicely. So I felt it really deserved it. You know, Pixar wins this category a fair amount of years, but it definitely deserved it this
year. I thought it was scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Too many skeletons.
Yeah.
I didn't see it because I'm a grown-up, but
I
heard really good things.
Yes.
I heard so. No, I used to think Pixar made the best movies in the world. I absolutely up. I mean, all that stuff. And then
you'll like this one then.
The Cars stuff kind of, I was like, I didn't even go see Cars. I was just like, all right, that's when they kind of lost me. You know,
that was made for to buy merch for 5-year-old
yes,
boys.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
What those movies
and
were.
To build part of a theme park.
But I mm-hmm. did hear really unbelievable things about Coco, so I
yeah.
would love
yeah,
to see
really
I
want
to
see it as well.
It is good.
It's one of the few times I've
now Boss Baby. Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
because oh, yeah. Here's the thing you don't understand.
I can't believe when we were doing the Oscar preview, I'm like, oh, I'm the only one who's seen Boss Baby, and Doug's like, no, I've seen it. I'm like, really? How did you see it?
But yeah. This is the thing. It's a baby. He's also the boss.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Now, see, hear me out. If you went to work.
He's in a suit.
Say you go to work. You walk in, and they're like, hey, the boss wants to see you. Like, oh, my God, I'm getting called on the carpet. What's going to happen here? You walk in the door, bassinet, goo-goo, rattle. What the fuck, man? It's a goddamn baby.
I've never had a real job, so I can't identify.
I forgot you're in the proletariat.
The proletariat. You've
never had a baby, boss? You never know.
Oh, yeah, this episode brought to you by Trotsky.
Yeah. So
when you've got to get somewhere quickly.
All right. Well, I
up into your
Trotsky. That
yeah.
is a supersized episode.
That was Oscar wrap up, guys. Oscar season. Put it in the books. We had
another one down.
The preview ep, the live stream, and then the wrap up, guys.
Yeah, that's
see,
a lot of Oscar
talk. See, they
can't
take the Oscars off because what are you guys going to do for 3 weeks? They can't.
Nothing.
It's like, it just this is perfect. It's a sweet spot for you guys.
What are we going to talk about? Red Sparrow for 3 weeks?
Come on, please.
This is our
Duh.
This is our Christmas.
This is our Christmas.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence takes her shirt off. That's what they should have named that movie.
Come on, J Law, you're better than this.
I like her. I like
fantastic.
Her as a person. She's fun. She's interesting. She's funny. And then I saw
she's
this ad
actress.
For this movie, and I'm like, oh, no, they're
I was thinking
to
go and
it.
See this movie, and then I was like, I don't know. It's over 2 hours. And
well, here's the thing.
Just after that boring one in space we just had.
Yeah. Well, not unlike Boss Baby. Here's the thing about Red Sparrow. It's a sparrow.
Yeah.
Get this.
What color is it?
Hold on a second.
Blue?
Come on. What are you thinking?
Green?
Absolutely not a sparrow that's green.
I don't know. I don't know birds.
Red sparrow, dude. Oh, my God. That's the twist.
And the red actually means...
What the...
Communism.
Yes.
Holy macaroni.
Because remember, Russia's responsible for everything.
Oh,
and
no.
you know, they made Black Widow.
Now, here's the thing about that movie. I'll tell you what.
Oh, God.
You find a widow. It's got a widow, right? So you got a widow. A normal widow. You're just like, all right, whatever. I got a widow. It's no movie. I don't have a movie with a widow. However... You throw a black at the front of it. That's a widow who's black. And it could be the veil, could be the skin, could be all of it, could be the whole package. Black widow, movie, done.
This is when we need a band to play Mike off.
You're right. That concludes our Oscars wrap-up episode.
Part one. Part two is...
always great to have Mike Schmidt for these.
Always honored to be asked.
Mm-hmm. One of the first one of the first post-wrap-ups we did was with Mike Schmidt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At my old place that I lost to foreclosure, thanks to Obama.
We live-tweeted that entire thing together, all of us.
Yes. Thanks for being on the show. Mike Schmidt, where can people find you on the World Wide Web?
Well, you know, you guys can get me at mikeandmikeschmidtcomedy.com. You can find me at facebook.com/the40-year-old boy. You can follow me at twitter.com/the40-year-old boy. And get this, I'm 50 years old, and yet I've involved myself in Snapchat and Instagram.
Happy birthday.
And my name there is Mike40YOB. That's Mike40YOB.
I was just picturing that Obama coming to Graham's house going, you have to leave.
That's pretty much how it shook out.
He literally
I want the Nobel Prize for Peace.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you got to go. You got to vacate the valley. Can I go to Van Nuys? No, you have to leave the entire valley.
Yeah, I had to move out of the whole valley.
And the website's MikeSchmidtComedy.com, and the podcast is The 40-Year-Old Boy, available on iTunes.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Which is also featured in Earbuds, everybody.
Yes.
Which is available at the Comedy Film Nerd Store.
Mm-hmm. As well as iTunes, and also if you have Amazon Prime, you could stream it.
There you go.
Every time you stream it on Amazon Prime, I think we get half a penny.
Yep.
So it'll add up in 100 years.
When we're doing this wrap up again.
Right, yes.
It's just the heads in jars. I thought Sam Rockwell VIII was very effective in this film. You know what I really liked was Boss, 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 Baby. That wasn't a bad movie at all.
Christopher Plummer just got another award.
Oh, my Christ.
Oh, and I love Gone, Boss, Baby, Gone.
Yeah.
Boss, Baby, Driver. Come on, we could do this all goddamn
night.
You could
and you should.
Thank you, Aaron Brungart, on the ones and twos for chiming in. We appreciate everybody here at the All Things Comedy World Headquarters.
Oh, how'd you do in your Oscar poll, Aaron?
I lost. Hang on.
I did not win. Oscar, appropriately named, upstairs, he got 21.
What?
21?
He picked 21?
Yeah, that's a tie. 21.
Wow. He crushed. Doug had 16. We each had 13. 21. Yeah, that's the best
that's impressive.
I've heard. That's the best I've heard.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.